Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox. Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Well, now I have to choose between two co-hosts to throw to first. I am going to throw to Kelly Wells first. Kelly, welcome.
Welcome, Javier, in your face.
There we go. I want to throw to Kelly, and I want to get his take on LA Knight's response to coming up short at Crown Jewel, but, and I praise this in my report at pwtorch.com, covering SmackDown tonight, but he pointed out he might have won if not for Jimmy Uso. He likely would have won if not for Jimmy Uso. I like when baby faces don't run from calling out heels for cheating. I like that they defend themselves doesn't, you know, just act like, oh, I've got to be meek about it and just accept that there was cheating and not point out that there was. I like that, and I like the shift to Jimmy Uso next week as a match. How do you think LA Knight did here? Because part of the test for Knight isn't just the hype to the match itself against Roman, but can he maintain some semblance of momentum afterwards? And I didn't think everything was great tonight with him, but I like that aspect of it and some others. What do you think?
So I covered LA Knight extensively as he was Eli Drake in NWA, and all the things that I was most worried about him falling into bad habits about are things that have largely been corrected here on the main roster. And well, they weren't problems in NXT because he was a heel there, and the things he was doing was were fine. There were times when I thought he was a little heelish in what he was saying, but so were the guys that were the biggest influences on him, obviously. They were heelish in things that they said and did every now and then. I thought that this was pretty strong from him, and if you're going to do an ultra-long championship reign like you are with Roman, then you've got to have the ability to have these guys come out of them strong, or else you're burying the whole roster. So they gave him something to do. They gave him a mission around that. And I think that I thought that he towed the line really well, being playful, being himself. But even just the what we think of as the worthless scene where we just see the guy walking through the back on his way to the ring, he looked focused. He really was. It was clear that he had something, a vendetta, something to get over here, something to get back, revenge. And I just thought that that whole segment, other than, you know, the fact that he eventually is so hard on his opponents, he could be the bigger heel in the Grayson Waller scene, which is impressive because Waller's quite the heel. I just really like all the ways that he's tweaked his babyface persona since the days he was Eli Drake, kind of towing the line between a little too annoying and things like that. It's really impressive, and I was one of his real big critics when he was not always keeping it in a face context, and now I'm one of his biggest supporters.
So Javier, I want to get your thoughts on that, and then I want to go back to Kelly for a couple concerns I had about things tonight with LA Knight. Small things, but they relate to things you just said. But Javier, what did you think of how LA Knight did tonight, and did you like the approach he took and the delivery?
Well, I think the most important thing for me was the fact that most wrestlers who were kind of like one and done from Roman Reigns, and they get, you know, screwed out, you know, by the bloodline, they just basically move on to something else, don't really mention it. Not just the cheating, but like even go say that I'm going to go back for the title. And the fact that even though it looks like he's being pivoted away from that, the fact that he said that I'm still interested in, you know, I'm still coming after him. That's my goal. And then he gets sidetracked by the Grayson Waller thing. And then, you know, with whatever's going to happen with Jimmy, when the WWE has done that, where the challenger loses and then he moves on to something else, it kind of, for the fans, you get used to saying, oh, well, he's not important. But by, like, moving him from that, from the Roman Reigns program to whatever he's doing next, more, what's the word I'm looking for, more smoothly, it makes him keep the importance of the fact that he was in the title match. He did get screwed out of it. That he still matters. So I thought that was, you know, the booking of it was really good. And as far as like what he did, you know, he basically tore into Grayson Waller, and I was surprised that there was a clean victory in there. I was assuming Theory was going to get involved to set up Theory Grayson Waller versus LA Knight and Kevin Owens, which I think is ultimately where this is going. I thought it was a good bounce back, all things considered.
So my my only critique of Knight, and Kelly, I want you to speak to this because I want to know if that's what you're getting at, is there are a few moments in his promo where it just felt like a little bordering on, I can't think of the right word, but tawdry came to mind. Like, and it works. Like, it's been done before. He's not the only one. And so I feel like maybe I'm picking on him, and maybe I'm wrong in even interpreting this way. But I feel like he walks to the edge of belonging back on TNA Impact or maybe the NWA with their standards. Like calling Grayson Waller Effect an STD. Well, no big deal on its own. Saying you look like you shouldn't be 50 yards within a school. I don't know if I, like, because someone has a weird haircut and is a goof, you want to accuse them of having a restraining order because a sexual predator towards children. Like, to me, that I just wouldn't go there. It feels a little out of a little off tone for what WWE does. And I think there was one other moment in there too. And then when he was like making fun of, and it just felt so cliche. Oh, you can take the boy out of the mother's basement, but can't take the mother's basement out of a boy. And it feels a little tired and cliche. That's what people say when they're losing an argument and they're a celebrity to somebody on the internet who's making a good point, to like say, well, you're not worth it because you're not famous. You're just at your keyboard. It's like why keyboard warriors, an annoying term. There's plenty of them out there, but it's just used so much. And I think in contexts where people are actually just losing an argument, fair and square. And so, like, there was a little bit of me that was just like, I don't know that I like that as much of that as we got. I want something a little more witty, a little more playful, a little bit more, I don't know, I say positive because that sounds like I'm saying, you know, New Day. He should be positive like New Day. That's not who he is. But I still would steer him a little more away from some of that. But again, I'm curious for both of your takes on this because it might just be personal taste and what I think would work best for him or what I like in a baby face. But Kelly, is that part of what you were getting at in terms of what you might've critiqued about him in the past? And did that strike you at all? And what do you think about my point? Because certainly I'm open to you guys disagreeing and thinking, no, I'm pointing things out that maybe not many people would be concerned about. Kelly.
You're actually kind of in the, it's been a while, so I can't remember all the things, that it was. I know that he would go out there and he'd go, yeah, but then he'd do it like 8 to 10 times before he started talking. So those were the things that really stuck out. But yes, aiming low with the wit is definitely something that was an issue too. And wrestling isn't highbrow. it really never has been. But yes, I agree that that the mother's basement line, it just doesn't get any lamer than that. If I see that on a movie, I know that I can safely turn the movie off because it just does not have the necessary level of cleverness to interest me. I thought that was low aiming. I think the low aiming part of it is worse than the tawdry part of it. And that is a good word for at least the one line that he did about the school. But the line about the school is, I guess my feeling is if you're going to be PG, if you're going to cater to this audience with your commercials, with your content, with everything, why throw a line at them where they would be like, what does that line mean? And then you as a parent have to explain what that means.
Yeah.
And I don't even know where you start there. And I'm not.
It feels like a low blow. That's a little out of proportion to what Waller has done to him.
Yeah. And Waller, I don't know that he looks like that. I guess you take the haircut and you just, I watch enough true crime to know that at the very least, the guy needs some large glasses if he's going to fit the profile.
As our listeners with large glasses go, whoops.
I've had large glasses in the past. That's not why I left them, but I'm glad that I did.
Yeah. So, Javier, your thoughts?
Yeah, I did notice the – it's funny because I did notice that it just came from a different way where I'm like – I'm thinking, wow, that's – there. He's going pretty PG-13 here. In an environment that is like pretty much almost G. So I'm wondering if that is that he has that leeway or if, you know, they're going to say, hey, tone it back, you know, take it back a few notches. So I did think about that because if he does have that leeway, that's not a leeway that a lot of the other wrestlers have. And that's another sign of, you know, how they feel about him is they let him get, you know, there's always been some wrestlers where they let them get away with, you know, pretty much, you know, murder on the mic. And if they're giving him a lot more space, that means a lot in, you know, how they're the way that they think. In terms of the content, I think if this were like on Impact or something, I wouldn't even have registered it because of that reason, for the whole PG-13, you know, kind of aspect or the higher rating. It did seem a bit off when you're, you know, in the WWE, particularly when you're venturing into, tawdry, you know, as you guys said, territory, which that feels like it's something more that they shy away from.
And you both have brought up like the rating. They don't talk about being PG anymore. I mean, I think they're just like they used to talk about that a lot. And I think they're a little bit edgier than they were at one point. But to me, even if you're never – if they had never said they're PG, that they were a PG show and they wanted to be edgy, I think Waller came across as more kind of sympathetic. I know fans are laughing at his expense, but like I just felt – oh, you abuse children. You live in your mother's basement, and whatever the other thing was that I said. It just, I don't know. It just felt. Again, it's like not like so obviously so, but it was more each of them individually, but collectively, it just seemed like kind of hack material, I guess would be the way I put it. So even if it's not so much that it was too edgy, it just felt like hack edgy. It wasn't clever or witty, it was just sort of hack. I guess that's what I would say. If it was another era and it was meant to be a late night show with Edge, I would have been like, oh, that's a bad promo too. It was just hack. So, but like I said, I mean, and also when there was a point where he wanted the crowd to, he asked, you know, do you really think you belong in the ring with Reigns? And then Knight was going to speak, but then he paused, and the crowd is supposed to go, yeah. It's hard to chant, yeah, yeah, like, yes, yes, is easier. And he sort of waited, and it was sort of like the crowd never got in sync, and then he just sort of moved on. So I think there was some aspects of this that I liked, some that I didn't. But I don't know. Yeah. To me, this is a bigger test. It's one thing to stand in the ring with a super produced segment with really smart people contributing, the top level writers. Obviously, Paul Heyman and Reigns take real good care of their characters and have input on what's going to be said and how to say it. And now I think he's kind of moving to the B team a little bit in terms of who he's interacting with Grayson Waller. That sounds like I'm insulting Waller, but he's not Reigns and Heyman. So yeah, I wouldn't say he failed the test, but a little bit of a warning sign to me that. You know, it just, to me, it felt a little hack. But anyway, anything else you want out of that, Kelly?
I would just say that this is the concerns that are there, even though they're much lighter than they are. This is who this guy is. And these concerns should be legitimate. because he is always towing the line on being too irritating. And again, I guess that's the character he found, that he's comfortable with, but with nobody there to slap him on the wrist and say, hey, keep this in a babyface context as much as you can. He kind of just was able to run wild. And every match that he had was almost a double turn, but then he would get himself back over during, because he would jaw a lot in the matches too.
Yeah.
But I would just say this is who he is, and this could really be an ongoing thing.
Yeah. All right, well, let's pause. Let's formally introduce everybody here and then get on to other topics on the show. We also welcome your comments on LA Night 2, and I'd certainly invite more opinions on that. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, November 10th, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor and publisher and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, the weekly newsletter, the website, pwtorch.com. And I also host many podcasts, including a Wade Keller Hotline earlier today. Spent nearly an hour with Nick Hausman from House of Wrestling, HAUS. And it was called Friday Scoops. It was the Friday Scoops edition of Wade Keller Hotline, because there's just a lot of insider stuff that that Nick and I had to talk about this week. We had message back and forth on a couple of things, and I was like, let's just do a show and talk about these. So we spent 56 minutes talking about the Cena surgery, his arm surgery, his future, the CW NXT situation, which Kelly, I'd like to get into with you later on tonight, if we have time. The whole NWA cocaine angle that led to it looks like a blow up of the CW deal. Also the latest on CM Punk and some the latest with Vince McMahon getting questioned about his sexual improprieties and some notes in the TKO and Endeavor Financials this week that drew attention to them, and just some insight into Paul Levesque and how he's handled this over the last year with, again, some behind-the-scenes insights. So if you're not a VIP member, check it out. Nearly an hour of top items from the week with some reporting and insights and insider information and perspective on it. pwtorch.com/govip to hear all of our VIP exclusive shows, including our VIP exclusive versions of this show, where we take the pre-recorded ads and in-house plugs out, so you just get this nice streamlined listening experience. pwtorch.com/govip. The other voices here on the show are Kelly Welsh from the PWT Talks NXT Daily Cast, the PW Torch Daily Cast. He also, along with Bruce Hazelwood, writes reports covering NXT in written format every Tuesday night live. And he is part of a VIP exclusive show also looking back at NXT from 8 years ago. Tom Stelp and Kelly Wells get together every week, and the show is called NXT 8 Years Back, with a fun review of things that were going on in developmental 8 years ago. Latest episode looks at the Vaudevillains against the Revival, currently FTR. Samoa Joe's heel mission statement, and also some movie talk, which is a fun part of the program also. And then the other voice you hear on the show is Javier Machado. We've got a roundtable format tonight for a variety of reasons. Javier is back with us. He did such a good job last week. We just couldn't wait to bring him back on. Javier, PW Torch contributor, writing pay-per-view preview articles for The Torch, and involved in a variety of audio shows too. Javier, welcome back. It feels like it's been a week.
Yeah, pretty much.
Welcome to the show.
Actually, there was the time, the daylight savings time thing happening, so it is a little bit off.
Yes, there is that too. Okay, cool. So thank you both for being here, and we welcome our listeners. If you're live streaming the show and want to join the conversation, the number is 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. 558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That'll flag you on our switchboard so we know you want to be brought onto the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. We are light on listener contributions at this point, people emailing or calling. So consider yourself invited. But we have plenty to talk about in our roundtable format. Kelly, it's hard to concentrate when you send cute pictures of your nephew to me while I'm trying to do a show. That kid is cute. Hopefully.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Hopefully he's go ahead. Yep.
He looks just like my brother did at that age. So I have not seen that face in like 40 years. And when my brother was born, I was very jealous of him and would like push him out of his bassinet. So far, I'm not doing that to my nephew.
I love it. And I love that he loved the cats and the cats aren't sure about him. That is very cat-like and very toddler-like. But yeah, there's a chance he'll have to leave us if he wakes up. That's part of why we've got two co-hosts tonight is the possibility that you won't be able to stick with us consistently throughout the show. Very cool. Very cool to see that cute photo of him and hear the story. So we'll, if you disappear, we'll know why.
Absolutely.
Okay. So I want to go to our first call of the evening and see where they steer us. This is Joe in Albany, New York. Joe, thank you for calling. You're up first. What's in your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Hey, guys. Nice to call during a round table. I've never called on one of those before. I did want to ask you about something else, but I just wanted to weigh in real quick on the LA Knight. I was prepared to say that I didn't think he went too far or that I didn't have an issue with what he said, but then I started to think about it, and I think, wait, you kind of convinced me. Like, probably when you really take a step back with that comment about being within how many feet of a, that's accusing him of being like an abuser. And I think that, I think I needed to think on that for a second before I, cause when I heard you bring it up, I was immediately ready to be like, oh, come on, you know, it's not a big deal. But then I thought about it for a second.
Yeah.
So I liked his promo tonight. I thought that it was good. And I thought that it was clearly, you know, it seemed to be pretty much off the cuff. It sounds like LA Knight is one of those people that probably gets to go out there and, you know, say what he wants to say. Cause I can't see a WWE writer writing that line. So I guess while I'm not like super offended by it, because I don't think it's terrible when you're watching somebody, I'm sorry, which one of you guys brought it up, but the whole having to explain to your kids, I don't know if that's necessarily the case. You know, I think sometimes that can make it more fun when an adult and a kid are watching the program, and it reminds me of Golden Girls when I was a kid. You know how many I watched that today? You know how many jokes that I just had no idea what they were talking about, and I get it now as an adult. I kind of view this the same way. You know, I don't know if the kid's going to turn it. Dad, what does that mean? You know, necessarily. So I don't really necessarily have a problem with that, but I agree with you that maybe he went a little too far with that one line, if that makes any sense at all. I feel like I'm talking both sides of my mouth, but
it. Well, no, and I did. I mean, I do too. In a way, like I wanted to express that, but I hedged because it's like I don't think it was egregious. It just felt like a warning sign of steering him. He still isn't fully fleshed out in terms of who he's going to be. The caricature of him as talked about on television is he's a derivative copycat blend of Rock and Steve Austin, and he's a catchphrase and he's, you know, doing derivative mannerisms. And I don't know that we've fully figured out as just sort of typical viewers of watching him on the main roster who he is. And that's why these sort of early impressions post the really well orchestrated, curated Roman Reigns situation, I think is going to kind of steer how people feel about him. And so to me, it's sort of like I would correct course on this, but I wouldn't consider it like some sort of emergency situation. But this is LA Knight's instincts on who he wants to be. And I would say if I'm him, listen to other people and understand that might not play super well in terms of his desire to grow and sustain himself as a top guy. And I mean, this is coming from watching this tonight, but also I think what were some prior concerns from people in WWE on him, and not that I was predisposed to feel this was where it was going to go, but boom, I was reminded of it watching it, that, you know, kind of left to his own devices, he might stray into a path that might hurt him a little bit because he's either going to be one dimensional or if he starts showing more of himself, that might actually be counterproductive to where he wants to go. Javier, do you want to add anything to this?
Well, I mean, if I'm going to review the three shots that he took, the school one I actually chuckled at because I'm like, yeah, I can see it. The The one on the basement, it was the where he lost me was the incel one, because that was like last year's insult.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
The basement one was fine, just because the nature of why this feud was this match happened is because, you know, this guy was, you know, tweeting out a storm, and it's, you know, so it was created on social media is where this the backstory for this match was. So the basement one was fine, but then the insult one is basically repeating the first one. Plus, it's an old one, so that line seemed like it would have come out from JBL.
Yes. Yes. Well, and the pushback on the mother's line to me isn't that I get why he said it in the nature and, you know, what would make it make sense and not seem like it's coming out of nowhere. It's just that it's such a tired, dated, overdone insult. So instead, come up with something fresh, like just you have nothing better to do with your life but sit on your phone and tweet me from a long distance. Well, now we're standing in the ring. What do you have to say to me face to face? Just stay away from the mother's basement thing. That's the part. Like, it's not insulting somebody for spending a bunch of time on the internet and being a troll or being annoying. I'm fine pointing that out. Just don't go to the lowest hanging fruit in terms of how you. It's like I'm consistent in criticizing anybody, including Samoa Joe, who I'm a huge fan of and have been for decades. When he goes, you know, I'm living rent free in your head, and I just roll my eyes. I'm like, that's so oversaid, and it was like 3 years ago. It was tired, and now it's just embarrassing to say it. And so that's sort of my point, is just don't come across like you really are at the mercy of imitating Rock and Austin and your material is dated. Like you've got to be plugged into pop culture. You've got to come with a material that's current and maybe even say some things that a lot of the audience isn't quite sure on, but they ask someone younger and they go, oh yeah, that's what people say now. Like, and that wasn't what I got tonight. Kelly, you groaned. Chime in if you'd like.
I did. I'm just dying inside because, like, so much of what he did was – it's as if he played Cards Against Humanity 5 years ago, and that's what he's basing all the things he's saying on. He thinks all this is clever, but it's all the things that everybody always says. Like, desperate to sound plugged into the zeitgeist, and – in reality, he just sounds like Mr. Burns saying, hello, fellow students. I cringed at this. He got away with it only because of his incredible, incredible charisma. Because he has a connection that people want to go on that journey with him, he got away with it. But these lines were weak. They were really weak and really hackneyed, and I think
he's an empty vessel. Other than, and he's even been framed that way. So as we fill him up with post Roman Reigns, but he's now a top babyface getting a push, headline to pay per view. Now he's got to show more layers to himself when he's outside of the A team working with him, and so these impressions are really important. And so this is not LA Knight shouldn't be pushed. This is he's got. I think that's what you get. Incredible charisma. Mm-hmm. But every single minute that he's on TV right now, a lot of eyes are on him and people want to like him. They want to stay behind him. And he's got to bring a material because he is still new enough. Things could get off the rails.
Yeah. I kind of am reminded of Bret Hart taking Steve Austin to task about how he was starting to use a whole lot of cliches. Like he said that on camera.
A whole lot of
warmed over Texas cliches with barnyard overtones. I remember that. Like,
wow.
Oh, that wow. is my favorite thing Bret Hart ever said. It was hilarious. And it was true.
Yeah.
Give LA Knight the necessary reason to expand his repertoire, because it just feels like he's just aiming for the lowest hanging fruit.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Joe, back to you. Do you want to comment on that or anything else? Another topic?
Yeah, I do. So it's fun, you know, it's funny when we're, you know, wrestling fans of a really long time, and it's funny because when you remember the promo with the signing, the contract signing, Wade, I called that night, and all those things you were saying about tonight is what I said about that night, and you loved that one, and then tonight. I actually really like this one, and you know what I'm saying. But it's just kind of—I don't know.
Yeah.
Nobody's wrong, but it's just kind of funny how we, because we kind of debated a little bit on that night, on the contract signing night. And I was saying, well, you know, I just feel like he's just setting up for the line and he's just a catchphrase. And you were like, no, but he, you know, it's thing I was going to point out.
Yeah.
Dragon Lee against Cedric Alexander. I thought that was awesome tonight. And it kind of, I don't know about you guys, but kind of reminded me a little bit about, remember back in the day in Nitro when they would have the Cruiserweight, you kind of a regular, I think they used to do it at the same time every week, but they were a prominent part of the show. I feel like almost this is an opportunity because the match was awesome. Dragon Lee is, I think, kind of the newer version of, you know, Rey Mysterio Jr. You know, I feel I genuinely feel like we could be, you know, Rey Mysterio still, you know, kicking and being great. But I feel like the trajectory for Dragon Lee is a real positive one. And I think also it's a sign of, like, you know, how we've been saying you're seeing more of Triple H in these shows, you know. And I like how he's weaving that in. I think Dragon Lee's kind of transition from NXT to the main roster has been one of the better transitions that I've seen. And I guess that was my question I'll post to you guys is, what do you think of kind of making the Cruiserweights a regular part of SmackDown or any of the shows? And do you think there are enough people to do it?
So reclassify them as Cruiserweights, you're saying? Not have them just blend in?
Yeah, see, that's kind of my question. Tonight's match between Dragon Lee and Cedric was, like, in my opinion, a Cruiserweight match, like a match that we would have seen
yeah.
on 205 Live, which and I thought it was the best match on the show. I don't know if, like, I think they should bring back the Cruiserweight Championship, and I guess that's my question. Do you think there's a way to feature yeah. these guys that are in that weight class that do that sort of lucha-style match and just do it every week, or should it be branded and made a thing, I guess is what I'm asking.
So my short take is, and Todd Martin's the one who convinced me of it, because I've been an advocate for Cruiserweights for, I mean, I was the first one to use the term Cruiserweight in an editorial as a way to try to rebrand and hit refresh on the terms that were very damaged, like light heavyweight and junior heavyweight, because they'd been jobbers. And then Mark Madden forgets that he read that, because then he pitched it in WCW, and he's taking credit for it. Hi, Mark. Within weeks, it was like, called the Cruiserweight title. And I was like, you've got to have a place to feature these wrestlers. But that was when WWF and WCW were all the big guys, like the tall guys. They were the ones getting pushed. And it was before Jericho and Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio really just caught on with a more modern fan base that was not hung up on size, like promoters assumed fans still were, if they ever were. And I mean, it was sort of territorial and regional and all that in terms of different fan bases had different impressions of how important size was. And it's fascinating, you know, as you march through wrestling history and learn about it, how, you know, wrestling fans in different territories looked at things differently based on the product they were given and the makeup of the community that the company was based in. But that's a whole other topic. So, but since then, I said it's going to be a short answer. Now I'm talking a lot. But my short answer is, I think the era has passed of designating weight divisions. I think there are too many top stars who would be cruiserweights. And so what cruiserweights has now become is guys the size of half the heavyweights who don't have the charisma, promo ability, star power, or backstory that makes them worth being featured on the main show in main event matches against main event stars. And I don't think people would explicitly say that, but I think that is the brand now. Cruiserweight means you're really talented. We like your matches on the undercard, but you're not stars, because if you were, you'd be higher on the card for the major titles. So I don't think you can go back there. I think you just integrate them into the show. Javier, what do you think on that?
Yeah. And, TNA had the X Division, which basically was the same concept as the Cruiserweight Division, except without actually limiting it to what it basically was the work rate division.
Yeah.
But nowadays...
It was the small guys who do athletic moves with a high work rate, as opposed to Jeff Jarrett and what he and his group were doing. And also in the X Division was Samoa Joe, who proved it's not about weight limits. It's no limits, but go ahead, Avia.
Yeah, so Mojo was the big one, but there were, I mean, over time, a couple of the guys also
yeah.
showed up, but for a cup of coffee, but that's what it was. And the thing is that now, like, the work rate is, you know, traditionally, you know, high enough where you don't also need that that line of demarcation. And yeah, Wade, I think you nailed it with it being the bland guys that don't that aren't going to get mic time.
Yeah. Kelly, what do you think?
I was hovering over my mute button trying to figure out when I could say it's not about weight limits, it's about no limits, and I was just barely too late. This one's close to my heart. I got a soft spot for, you know, I feel like you could have at one point done separate weight classes in American pro wrestling and had it work. In New Japan, this is still extremely, well, not just New Japan, but in Japanese promotions. It just happens to be New Japan that I never miss a show where they carry shows. I mean, the whole last month of New Japan, and I fell a month behind, so I've actually watched 40 hours of New Japan this week. So if I start talking about the wrong wrestlers, I'm sorry. I just keep watching the same guys. You've got this tour going on with nothing but smaller guys, and they're still packing them in. But that's because they've made – I mean, that's the approach for so long they can get away with it. I just feel like so much work would have to be done to make that work in this country. And indeed, when smaller guys are winning these championships, major championships, it doesn't require those things to be separate anymore. As for the question as originally asked, I think the less attention you call to this, the better. You certainly don't want people going out there and changing the ring ropes to purple, giving the fans to be a reason to be annoyed that things are slowing down just to focus on these guys that they don't get to see as often anyway. Don't call attention to it. Just if you want this to be any kind of revolution, and you don't need it to be that, you can just strengthen what is a weakness in the show. Then just throw them out there and give us reasons to care about these guys before you just throw them out there. Don't throw them out there cold like they did with the 205 matches. I don't expect we will see weight class division championships in this company anytime soon, but I'm all for seeing more matches about this. And I could go on about Dragon Lee for a very long time, but I will not. I will throw back before I'm tempted to do so.
Well, I'll just say this briefly. I think what they're doing with Dragon Lee, and every time I watch him get pushed and how he's presented, it just feels like this is a window into Paul Levesque's approach to things. And I was thinking about how and even Kairi Sane a little bit. Like, he's going to have Kairi Sane. No, I meant to say Shotzi. No wonder I pronounced it wrong. That's what I feel about. Well, Kairi Sane works too. I guess it was a Freudian slip because I'm thinking about both of them. He's got his favorites from NXT, and he knows them, he believes in them, and with each of them, Vince McMahon would have had a disqualifier. You know, we already got that person in that category. Why do we need another? Or this person worked, but this person won't with similar shortcomings. And Paul Levesque's gonna look at what he knows is the bright side and the strengths of some of them, and he wants Dragon Lee to be his Rey Mysterio. It didn't work out with Sin Cara. Dragon Lee is a good bet to work out. Kelly, I feel like it would be an injustice to not throw to you and have you at least spend a little time on him as opposed to feeling like you shouldn't. What do you have to say about Dragon Lee?
I'm glad you recognize that would be an injustice. Definitely. I've seen more than dozens of matches of Dragon Lee, following him in primarily New Japan when he was there. I've seen other matches of his, of course. But yes, I'm lucky enough that these matches with Cedric, they're maybe in the top 10 matches of Dragon Lee's I've seen. That's how lucky I've been to see what he can do. He's had some bangers with Hiromu Takahashi that defy description, that were great in every way, except Hiromu got injured really badly in one of them, but it was kind of nobody's fault exactly, but these kind of things happen. Dragon Lee is somebody who can get over despite the fact that he doesn't need to do a lot of mic work. But that said, Ray is serviceable on the mic. He's not like he's not going to win in any acting awards, but Mysterio knows how to make people sympathize with him. He was always good at that. And if Dragon Lee continues to be good at that, then it won't matter that he's not like a dynamo on the mic or anything, because he can let so much of what he can do in the ring speak for him. Ring psychology, would like to see that more ramped up every time he's in there. He can get a little spot festy at times if he's not thinking about it, but in the right context and in the right tournament. And for instance, in the Best of the Super Juniors a few years ago, he was just somebody where I watch every New Japan show. Some of them I watch distracted, but I will not watch a Dragon Lee match distracted. I just love the guy.
Yeah. Javier, do you want to jump in on Dragon Lee at all or anything else before we throw back to Joe?
Yeah, well, I mean, just the fact that I think WWE signing Dragon Lee saved his life if they, you know, preventing him ever from crossing paths with Hiromu again, because those two would, like, literally try to die. You know, they would do just the most insane things, and, you know, they were crazy, but... but yeah, I mean, I co-sign everything because I also follow a lot of the Dragon Lee slash Ryu Lee as he wrestled on occasion, and yeah, I mean he's and the promos he cut were fine, so you know I'd like to see what more he can do.
Cool, Joe, back to you.
Yeah, guys, and thanks for all that feedback. I'm more inclined to agree with Kelly, maybe, to not bring attention to it, and I think that's kind of where I was originating. I was on the fence myself. But I totally agree that the moment you start changing ropes, the moment you start, they're gonna ruin it. So, you know, have these guys go out there. Dragon Lee, my favorite. I can't think of another call-up, if you will, that I've liked more than him, honestly. The way these guys were landing on their necks tonight and, well, you know, safely, I guess. Some of those didn't look that safe, but they're the professionals. It was great to watch. And it reminded me of Cedric, how entertaining he is in the ring. And, you know, a guy like you guys were just saying that may not have the mic skills that, you know, only thrive when they're in a group. I think that this is the answer for it, is to put some of those guys together and let them put those bangers on in the ring. So thanks for your guys' input on that. I would ask you, what do you think about what's going on with the women? Do you think that that's a setup for what is it? War games? I mean, we saw kind of an expanded damage control tonight, I guess, against the babyfaces, Rhea and Charlotte and Shotzi. Do we think that, you know, just time to add two more and then that's our second War Games match?
Well, Kelly, it's good to have you on to talk about this because War Games is being brought up from NXT or over from NXT to Survivor Series. So you might know, you might be able to speak well to Paul Levesque's tendencies when it comes to building these and setting them up.
Yes. So that is what this is. I would be very, very surprised. The fact that this many people were involved and it was the main event segment, I think, points to not Survivor Series, War Games. I would be very, very surprised if that's not what this is. I don't get the feeling they're going to make this 5-on-5. I guess they've got the time if they want, but the only way that's going to work is if Dakota's ready to come back from injury. Otherwise, they have to shoehorn another heel in there, which they can do. But I would say that if this is going to be War Games, they're just going to do the women as a 4-on-4. Which they did in NXT. They played with 4-on-4, 5-on-5, 6-on-6. And even once where it was 3-on-3-on-3, where there were three teams of three, it was messy, but it was interesting.
Yeah, I brought that up on Monday's show in terms of possibly the Bloodline getting involved with the other two factions being set up on Raw. And I don't think so, but I wanted to like at least discuss it just to play out that scenario. But it can get messy, and anyway.
Yeah, I think this will be 4-on-4. Shotzi, I mean, she's got no bigger fan than Triple H. He's a huge fan of her. He always put her over in the post-show, the post-PLE and whatnot shows, And I know when he had her as the choice for the host of Halloween Havoc a few years ago, he said, who better to host this? And I thought, well, lots of people, but, you know, I'm with you. I'm with you. But, yeah, she's they've reinvented her a few times, and hopefully something can stick here because she can connect to audiences. Yeah, I don't know who this fourth person will be, but this is definitely, I think, a four-on-four War Games match.
And Javier, over to you for comments on any of the last couple things we talked about.
No, I mean, my question is, where Jade?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Is that the right way to introduce her in that circumstance with no history with them? I'm not saying it's not. It's a hell of a way to debut, but I'm not sure if you want her in the ring with that many people all at once without that backstory. But if they needed help?
Well, I mean,
a fourth partner,
they can't find someone, and then it's, you know, a surprise entrance. I think that might be the reason why we haven't heard from her for, you know, after like a blitz of sightings of her, because I think they want us to forget about her so that she can make a big splash.
Yeah.
You know, maybe on the build, you know, and more likely on the build, they'll, you know, they'll find themselves outnumbered again and she'll make the save. Because, I mean, right now on the SmackDown roster, that's the only one I can think of, unless they're going to bring someone from Raw. But I don't know why you would really do that right now.
Yeah.
Bring her out for just the finish. Just the finish. Don't have her work the match. Just bring her out there. Have her tap somebody out.
Yeah, if she's surprised at the actual Survivor Series event, have her be the last one in and just kill everybody and then, you know, leave.
Yeah. Very good. Joe, anything else you want to bring up before we move on to other callers?
Yep. I think that's gonna do it. I like the Jade idea a lot, like a whole lot. Yeah. And I think, you know, Wade, it might be even better to have a few people in if it's done the way they, you know, Kelly and I'm sorry, who's the second person?
Javier.
How you guys? Javier. Jeez, I'm sorry, Javier. how dare me, right? But the way you guys just booked it, I think that's the best way to do it, is to have her come in and just kind of dominate and look dominant and be great. Real quick, last thing I was going to say is, because at the end of this, and it's a little bit off topic, but I'll be quick. Wade, last week you guys, when I you guys were talking, I think, about the differences between, you know, like WWE and AEW briefly. And as a fan of both, more WWE lately, I think I got it. And then I will end with this, and you guys can either discuss this or move on. I think WWE, bear with me, is like Thanksgiving. Like Thanksgiving dinner. Right? It's usually pretty good. Sometimes it's really great. If you ask me, it's been really great lately. Like the turkey's never been better. You know, there's more desserts than ever. And I'm really enjoying it. AEW to me is more like, it's more like a frat party, right? Like it's fun. Sometimes it's really fun, but, and this is part of the AEW fans aren't going to like, but at the end of it, you don't always remember what happened, you know? And
oh my God,
kind of
that's what I was going
to
say.
That thought came to me as I was driving in my car, listening to you guys, and I was listening to the recording. So I couldn't call in, but I'm like, next time I call, I'm going to tell them this theory. And that is my theory. WWE, Thanksgiving, AEW, frat party. And then I will leave you guys with that. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Joe. Kelly, yeah, you like that analogy?
I actually do. It's a major reason that I don't spend a ton of time with AEW. I like seeing what they're doing. I love so much of their talent. But I feel off. I would say about half the time afterwards, I was like, those were good empty calories. But I feel like I just ate a bag of Funyuns. Like, what did that just give me?
right, yeah.
That's kind of how I feel. So, and I don't want to be like hurtful to it. I there's things to like about that show, but that is how I feel coming out of it sometimes.
Yeah. How do you feel about that, Javier?
Well, I mean, my analogy has been a prestige format TV show like on HBO versus something you see on the CW.
Now, that analogy is more complicated this week now with NXT.
Yeah, I did get – well, okay. CW, the area of the of, in the era of the Arrowverse before they sold it to WB sold it to whoever they did. So
yeah, you got to come up with a new one. That's too clunky. Too many.
Yeah,
words.
No, I know. It's oh, I mean, I've been feeling this for a long time, Wade. So
I gotcha. All right, we've got Joe, another Joe from New York on hold, also Jay from Michigan. But first, we're going to go to Josh, who was in attendance tonight, I believe. Josh Mustachio. Welcome, Josh. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, no problem, Wade. Thanks for having me. It was a very fun show. It had about, say, 98% full. So crowd was excited and took my three boys again, and we had a good time.
It is fun watching wrestling, and I've watched long enough to see, and I watch all week and see very different crowd sizes on these shows. When those spotlights shine on that upper deck of a modern arena, that fourth tier above the lower deck, the club level, the luxury suites, the upper, it's like, and you can see heads up, outlines of heads up against the back wall of the arena. It's a nice touch. And I mean, like you said, it wasn't just packed everywhere, but it does give it a major league vibe. And it's the thing I say a lot about AEW is you want big crowds because that's how your wrestlers get perceived as stars. Is having big crowds well at arenas and crowds reacting to what they're saying. So that leads me to my first question for you, Josh, and Kelly and Javier, I'm going to throw to you guys too for questions for Josh. How did LA Knight come across? Where did you sit and how did he come across under the spotlight without Roman Reigns to specifically play off of? And he's, you know, we talked earlier in the show, he's now got a shift to other things. Now he's still with, you know, feuding with Bloodline over Jimmy Uso's interference, but also interacting with Grayson Waller. How do you think he did? And talk about how the crowd reacted to him when he came out and as the promo progressed.
It was the second loudest pop of the night. The loudest was Cody in the dark match main event. So, but the crowd was just amazing. I mean, the one thing I did notice when he came out that when he was doing his promo, the lights on the crowd were even brighter. And I just told my buddy that we were there with, I said, assuming that they're showing the crowd a lot, doing the LA Knight chants while he's pointing his finger and stuff. Because I can't remember the last time I was at an event that the lights were so bright while someone was in the ring doing the promo. So, I mean, it was amazing, Wade. The crowd was just eating them out of the palm of the hand, and it didn't seem like he lost anything from losing the Roman, and he just seemed like, and then the crowd booed so hard when Grayson Waller came out. We were sitting about six rows up around where the hockey seats start. So we weren't on the floor, but we were up in the arena seating. So it was right behind Michael Cole and I guess Kevin Owens tonight. We saw Kevin Owens like, man, kind of missing what he's saying. It was funny, though. It did come off pretty good when he was doing the John Madden illustration. Everybody in the crowd was laughing when they had it on the Titantron, even though you couldn't hear anything they were saying. But that came off pretty well. But, yeah, LA Knight, I would say, for the show part, had the biggest pop, and the crowd was just loving it. There was quite a few fans that were sitting in front of me around me that had LA Knight shirts on. So, I mean, I would say you didn't lose too much from this past weekend show.
Yeah, the part that I like most about the LA Knight interview is he said, I'd be champion. I didn't let anyone down. It was Jimmy Uso interfering. I mean, that's how you keep Pete on heels, is holding them accountable by having the baby face point out, hey, I didn't lose in any kind of way that the heel gets to brag about. And then saying, I'm going to take it out on Jimmy Uso to start with, you know, sets him up for a big match next week. Javier, do you have a question for Josh?
Which the crowd seemed really into the Cedric Alexander Dragon Lee match. Were they into it from the get-go? Because, you know, I normally those kind of matches, it takes a little while for people to get into, but it felt like it was almost this is awesome chance from the get-go.
I would say it took a second. I joke with my buddy about it. The family in front of us, when they came out, got up and went to the concession stand. But I think, like you said, by the end, I think the crowd was very into it. And especially my kids, you know, they see him like a Rey Mysterio type, you know, with the mask and everything. And I think it was just got a couple people clapping during their exchanges and stuff. So I think it came off well. You know, I think both of them did. And then, you know, it just, I think that the kids, he's a superhero type, Dragon Lee. So at least to my boys. Who are 10, I got twins that are 10 and the youngest that's 8, so kind of hit their age range.
At first, Josh, I thought you were going to say, I have twins who are 10 and 9 or something. I'm like, wait, no, they're not.
No.
I thought you were going to mention two ages. It's, for that very split second, I'm like, wait, what's happening here? But now I get it. I just had to share my internal little joke there. Cool. Kelly,
I get it
for Josh about what happened. Oh, go ahead, Josh.
No, I'm saying I get it from Rich all the time. So,
Kelly, yeah.
I'm a 46-year-old boy, and I also like Dragon Lee. So your boys are correct. Regardless of their ages, they are all correct about him. I would say definitely go back and watch this show. If you liked what KO did on the Telestrator, you will really like what he did during the show. He was several times almost over the meta line, joking about the way things are booked. They asked him about his matches with Roman Reigns, and he goes, well, I've lost to him 4 times now, so I'm kind of getting used to it, and things like that, which were amusing. And I think he's pretty good at stepping up against the line and not quite crossing it. Josh, I will ask you, you more or less got to see 2 heel turns tonight, Santos Escobar and Asuka. Asuka is already kind of a nebulous character. Escobar has been mostly famous, mostly babyface on the main roster, but on NXT he was mostly a heel. Let me take out what I thought about the turns. But did these turns for you in the crowd? Did they work for you? And if so, which was better? And what did you think about these turns?
Oh, I it's funny because my buddy, he does a podcast, and he was talking about wondering if Asuka would ever join them. And it was funny because I was sitting right next to him, and he's like, I told you this. But the Santos, it was like, I think a lot of people were disappointed. They were even more disappointed, you know, with him just standing there watching. And then when Ray's coming out with the chair, I thought that came off really well. I mean, I think everybody that pays attention kind of figured it was going to happen one way or another, but it was just a little, I think it upset some of the people there that, you know, the younger people, I would say, like, come on, help them out. You know, it was nice for me personally, being a fan for so long, seeing Carlito in person again. I didn't have that on my bingo card for this year, but, you know, the Asuka turn I thought was great because I wasn't even thinking about, you know, her turning. And then what you guys said about War Games, I kind of said that to my buddy. I said, you know, when Shotzi ran out, we're like, oh, man. And then we were wondering if there was going to be a fourth to come out. And it just it's a good team. I was a little bit like, are they going to turn on Bayley when she was getting up? Like, come in for the hug and then kind of give her a suplex or powerbomb shield style in the ring. So
they shot it that way too. Like we at home thought that same thing might happen.
My son Legion in the back said, I thought the same thing. You're fine. So I just thought where we were sitting was behind Bayley. So you're looking up at the Titantron and seeing her face and just doing the second hug of the night, I thought for sure, if I was putting money on it, that that they were going to do something to her. And I thought more of it being like a tag team, but then, like I said, the War Games thing kind of broke out after Shotzi and them came out.
Josh, rank the rest. You've already talked about who got the biggest reaction, but kind of go a little deeper into it in terms of where you mentioned LA Knight and Cody. Where does Ray rank the women, Bianca versus Charlotte, in terms of their pops? I'm curious, for a crowd this big, you're drawing a really big section of fans, not just hardcore fans who are going to be like Bellwether fans who might be, you know, have a very narrow view of what they're looking for. This is a really mainstream WWE crowd, so it's fun to hear that, you know, just in the middle of the country, big audience. Who else was popular, and how big of a drop off was it from the top ones?
I think the biggest of the night, like I said, was Cody, and then LA Knight and Jey Uso both had. I think my boys were dancing the Jey Uso coming out because he fought Gunther. He fought Gunther for the IC belt after the show went off, and Jey won by Gunther low blowed him to get out of the match. But Bianca had the biggest pop for the women. They popped pretty loud for Charlotte. They popped pretty loud for Asuka when she came out, you know, the even up the score. I thought in the dark match to start the show, the Brawling Brutes fought Pretty Deadly, and Pretty Deadly got a pretty good pop, surprisingly, before the show. But I would say that, you know, LA Knight was amazing. Dragon Lee for the kids was good, but Bianca had the biggest for the women, and then Cody, like I said, after for the show. The most shirts I saw tonight was of LA Knight, though. That was undeniable, is his shirts are just, and then the signs, they had the signs going around. There was three different groups of people that had letters cut out spelling yeah. So I don't think I've seen so many word cutouts at a wrestling show. The one person, though, is funny because they put him on the Titantron for the show your sign, and the guy who was holding up the A had it upside down. I thought that was pretty funny.
Oh, God. Yes, yeah, that's nice. That is funny. What was the low point of the show, either during SmackDown or before and after? Specifically SmackDown, actually. Was there any point where they lost the crowd, or it seemed like a drag, either because there were a lot too many commercial breaks or too many videos, or the match just didn't hold people's attention?
I think the women's match, it was a long – it looked like, from looking at my clock, it started around 9:41 with the entrances, and they took a couple commercial breaks before the match started, and then they went into another break. And you could tell they went into a break because Bianca and them started doing a little dance in the ring before Bayley got back in. It was a little long-winded. I mean, it picked up, obviously, at the end with what was going on, but that was probably the lows. The crowd was pretty high for, you know, I'll say that Austin Theory got a pretty good boo, and Grayson Waller, when they came out to, you know, throw the water on Kevin Owens and stuff. So that was pretty there. Like I said, quite a few people got up during the Dragon Lee match, kind of like, I guess you call it the popcorn spot. But, you know, like I told my boys, when we got there around 7:05. It started at 7:45. So we're going to go to the bathroom. We're going to go to the concession stand and do whatever we did. Said the show's pretty short. You know, no one else. We didn't have to get up for bathroom break or anything like that. I can't imagine. I haven't been to a Raw, and I can't remember the last time I've been to a live Raw. So they had a pre-sale for it. It's April 22nd. I told the boys, if you're on spring break, we'll go. But if they have school the next day, there's no way we're going to be going to Raw at 7 o'clock and getting out at midnight.
unfeasible for
a family. And I would say that, though, too, Wade, our seats were about the same spot we were. We were about three rows up from where we were from the day after Christmas house show they had, because it was in the Blue Jackets, the hockey arena. The last two SmackDowns we went to was the Ohio State arena. And the tickets were about $24 more this time than they were about a year ago. So I don't know if it was because
they got away with
four or five rows. Yeah, well, they, and that's what I told my buddy Kevin. I said, the last couple SmackDowns we went, they were, I mean, LA Knight was there and they sent Cody, but the last dark match they sent Miz and AJ Styles because the show didn't have any bloodline last time we went, from what I remember. Rhea Ripley wasn't there. It was when the Judgment Day was starting off pretty big. So I think WWE's been pretty lucky with Columbus and the crowds coming and the stars or lack of stars that have actually been on the show, because we haven't had Roman Reigns. My son Legion was hoping that John Cena was going to be there, and you know, with kind of the breakdown of when we bought the tickets of when he was coming back, and I told him, you know, the strike's over. So that, and then no Solo tonight. You know, Jimmy was there because he filmed when he did the thing with Roman. I'm sure it was on TV. It had the Blue Jackets stuff on there because I told my buddy, I said, maybe he filmed this last week or something, but he had the Columbus Blue Jackets stuff behind him. So, but, yeah, he didn't come out in front of the crowd, and that's the only drawback I'll say. I mean, WWE is so hot right now, I don't think it matters, but it's pushing the buttons of not bringing all the stars, and I have a feeling that's why Jay and Gunther was one of the matches, and then Cody Rhodes fought Dominic in the other match after the show went off. So at least they're making good on sending Cody for the fans, especially paying. I mean, go ahead.
How aware are you of the advertising that they did, and did they match up what they advertised with who appeared in the matches they had?
They had the advertised. I knew that Jay and Gunther, because I looked that up last week just to see, because when we bought the tickets, we got the tickets, the pre-sale, because they were selling out fast, Wade. I told my buddy, I said, hey, are you comfortable? We end up paying $84 for each seat. So, and like I said, that was in the regular seats for the hockey arena. That wasn't floor seats or anything. And they really didn't advertise too much that far out. So I can't even remember when I got the tickets. So, they were supposed to have Cody in a three-way, I believe, in the main event. I believe it was the Judgment Day versus Cody, and I want to say Sammy, but I can't remember exactly. But they were pretty good. Go ahead.
Yeah, give me a quick rundown of the finishes of the matches before and after SmackDown, just so we have a record of what actually happened off camera, okay. Especially because we might not, they probably won't make air.
Yeah, Brawling Brutes beat Pretty Deadly. They did a powerbomb into a roll-up. And then Jay beat Gunther. Gunther, he was getting about to be belly-to-belly, and he kicked him in the crotch area with his leg, and the ref called for the bell. And then Cody did his Cody Cutter and then did his Crossroads to beat Dom, and then Dom rolled out, and then Cody got on the mic thanking everybody for coming. And then pointed out that his cousin was works for the WWE crew, I guess, and was ready to get out of here because I think he said it was his birthday or something. we were actually walking out trying to get to the car and stuff. So the three dark matches that weren't on the show.
Two quick follow-ups, then I'll throw it to Javier and Kelly for any closing questions. The Gunther Jay match, just to be clear, Jay lost by DQ?
No, Jay won by DQ.
For a low kick?
Gunther.
So
yeah,
Jay,
yeah.
Uso,
Gunther,
Jay Uso
Jay
pinned Gunther tonight?
No. He was about to do a belly-to-belly, and Gunther kicked him in the crotch.
Gunther did.
And the ref called for the bell. Yeah,
okay.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
It's probably my mistake in terms of interpreting your words. So Gunther... But Jay won by DQ when Gunther kicked him low.
Yes. He was
good.
The belly to belly, and yeah. And then he just kicked him took his leg up and...
Yeah. God, when you said Jay beat Gunther, and then you talked about a low kick, I got mixed up, so I wanted to clarify, and I'm glad I did. And then my only other follow-up on that is just Dominic. What kind of heat did he have as a heel compared to anybody else on the show? It was pretty late in the night. People had seen a lot of stars, but it was for Cody. How did that work out, crowd heat-wise?
He was getting his – he came out as Jay was walking out, and he played a cowardly heel thing, you know. and ran off. And then, you know, they did the little spot where everybody's cheering Cody and Dom gets on the remotes and the whole crowd just gives them the whole boo, boo, you know. And it wasn't too – it might have been like a six-minute match. It wasn't too long of a match. So, but, yeah, the crowd was – you know, I was – there was no Rhea Ripley, no Sheamus with the Brawling Brutes. So, and then Gunther was by himself, so he didn't have his boys. So they kind of just sent those guys for the dark matches. But yeah, they the crowd was into it.
You didn't have to sit,
like I said,
you didn't have to sit through 2 hours of. Sorry, Jeff, you didn't sit through 2 hours of ROH tapings. You actually got to see some stars after the TV show went off the air. So different experience than AEW.
I told my buddies if we were at Raw, we'd still about have 90 minutes left at 10:30.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, so Kelly, any closing question or for Josh before we let him go and get to our other callers?
I think you pretty well got it.
Yeah.
I mean, I wondered if anybody joked about how old Carlito and Bobby Lashley were, since that's the first match we saw on the show, but otherwise... I think I'm good.
And Javier, how about you?
No, I think I got everything.
Cool. Josh, thank you so much. We'll hear you on the next Everything Mailbag with Rich and Josh.
That sounds good. Thank you, guys. I appreciate your time, and looking forward to listening to the rest of the show.
Thank you for taking time to talk to us. Really appreciate it.
Yep.
All right. You can still call us if you want. Our number is 347-215-8558. Push 1 if you call. We now go to we'll go to Joe New York first, and then see if Jay still wants to join us. He unclicked 1. Our second Joe in New York, but New York, welcome, Joe. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Yes, good evening, guys. I just want to talk about the WWE business overall, and SmackDown plays a big part of what I want to talk about. I think WWE might be setting themselves up for embarrassment without even realizing it, because SmackDown is going to go from Fox to USA, which is a major downgrade right off the bat, because they're not going to get 2.3 and 2.2 and 2.1 on USA. You're going to go down to the 1/8 and 1/9, because that's what SmackDown's always done on USA Network. And the fact – people didn't bring this up enough. The fact that Fox – that they only got 2.5 million on Fox – is a major disappointment. That's why Fox said, get out of here. They didn't think about it. Why did Fox want to leave WWE now when they're more legitimate now than they ever were with this TKO deal? They said, no, we're not interested, because they told them right in the beginning, we want $3.5 million a week. And they only did that one time, the very first episode of SmackDown on Fox.
Yeah.
They never touched it after that. Now, the reason I say it's a disappointment, though, because you're going to put your C show on a regular network. I know it's a lower network, but still, at the end of the day, they have more subscribers on the regular channel than they do the cable channel. So there's a possibility. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but there's a strong possibility if the show gets hot, your C show can outdo what's supposed to be your A show, and you should never set yourself up for that. It's
so, Kelly, I want to throw to Kelly about his thoughts on the NXT situation and what Joe brings up, how it relates to SmackDown in a downgrade USA, other than it won't be preempted, which is a positive. You know, sometimes Fox affiliates block SmackDown. I've had to watch it on the app 3 times in the last few weeks because local high school or college, I can't remember what it was airing on the broadcast, but. So that won't happen, but USA is available in fewer homes, and attendance but ratings viewership is very likely to go down. Real quick note: SmackDown, if it did 3.5 million, would have probably gotten a higher bid from Fox, because the numbers weren't high enough to make up for the fact that they just can't get the same sponsorship money that they can for non-wrestling shows. Fox outright said that, you know, it's a challenge. It's less of a challenge than it was 25 years ago, but it still is. So, Kelly, your thoughts on the changing TV situation for NXT versus SmackDown? And I will say, I will not take the bet that NXT will ever outdraw SmackDown, even if NXT went to Fox, I think that'd be a challenge, but it'd be maybe more of a contest, although obviously that's not going to happen. So that NXT going to Fox. Kelly, your thoughts?
Yeah, you more or less took what I was going to say. I just don't think that they have the ability to draw a lot further than what they're doing now. Maybe I should be more excited about this news. Maybe I should add more weight to this news. I don't know, but I just feel like we've seen the height of what they can do on this show. I got a baby getting in my face.
I was thinking that might be happening.
It is happening. Yeah. Give me a second here, and
And
if he's okay, let me come back.
Of course. Javier, your thoughts on the changing landscape and what Joel brings up?
Yeah, I doubt. I mean, the only way it'll do that is if they basically try to overload it, you know, kind of how they've been doing the last couple of weeks, and basically putting in your entire, you know, Raw, SmackDown roster onto NXT. But in that case, you're just essentially competing with yourself. So I doubt that's going to happen. I'm curious in terms of what this means for the ratings for NXT, because, the thing is that, yeah, it's on broadcast TV, but I'm like, how much of a real difference does it do now since everything has been, you know, now you have cable, you have streaming, you have, you know, broadcast is like, you'll be able to find stuff. So I don't know how much more that's going to mean, but it's going to be interesting to see, and particularly if there's a change in nights also. So any word on that, Wade, by the way, if NXT is changing nights? No words?
No.
Yeah, so... So that's the other, you know, that would also be another question.
I am curious if they have a night in mind, or if WWE's made it clear to CW that Raw and SmackDown get to pick the nights first and CW gets whatever's, you know, left over. And that can have to do also with CW's other sports broadcasts, because, you know, they don't want NXT preempted a bunch, but the CW wants to be a home to, they want to be known as the sports broadcast network with some college stuff, NASCAR stuff, NFL Weekly Show, which shouldn't be a problem. They can schedule that whenever. But the live sports could dictate things too. So, I remain fascinated with how this all falls into place by next fall. It could really change the landscape for a lot of things that we've just kind of gotten used to in recent years, including some hardship for AEW if the good nights are taken up and they got to make some tough choices.
And I haven't had a chance to listen to the WB. Well, no, WB is not with CW anymore, so never mind. Ignore me.
Okay, fair enough. Joe, back to you. Any follow-up on that or anything else you want to bring up?
Yes, thank you. I want to push back. I still say, and I hear a lot of people say it, the WWE product is hot. Really? The Raw rating sucks. It's 1.5 for the whole month. I mean, I know it's football season, but you watch that show, and it's the Judgment Day versus a couple of top main eventers there. You know, it's just not – the fans don't agree, or the TV ratings don't agree with that, because they're getting 1.3s, 1.4s, or 1.5s every week. That's not a high product. That's just not. And SmackDown, like I said, it's going to be getting good ratings as long as it's on Fox, but when it kicks over, it's going to go to those 1.8s. And I don't see that changing. And the whole thing is, what are they going to do with the – when they – actually, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I'll say this as far as Raw ratings go, Joe, and then I'll throw back to you. The demo rating a year ago in these last 10 weeks was 0.458, so rounding up to a 0.46. The last 10 weeks of Raw – this year has averaged 0.451, rounding down to a 0.45, but it's pretty even in terms of the and that's, I believe, the percentage of homes who have access to it in that age group who are watching it. So some of the drop off you're seeing in viewership is related to cord cutters. So from a demographic standpoint, Raw's holding pretty steady. You're right, the overall cable number is down. It's averaging, I think like 0.98 compared to 1.18. So, I mean, it's down significantly in terms of the overall caper rating. There's some mixed signals, but, I mean, SmackDown and NXT have grown more than Raw. And, you know, Raw last year, I like to compare it seasonally, not you know, because you want to account for when they're up against football. But Raw faced some doubleheaders this year, too, from the NFL early on. That, as Jason Paul pointed out a couple weeks ago on the flagship, has hurt them also. So there's some mixed signals. I mean, how you can't – it's just not fair to compare a number today to a number from 2005
or
2013, 10 years ago. I mean, it's just – the landscape's different. The fact is Raw, except for the NFL, is one of the top shows on cable anytime, all the time. I mean, other than some college football games. But even then, Raw's doing real comparable. It's only the NFL's better. So it's so different with streaming and the splintering of everything. But, you know, when you have a near sold-out crowd tonight for SmackDown, I mean, there's other indicators that it's hot, but you can't compare Peacock to the pay-per-view era or even the WWE Network era. There's so many differences. It is hard to compare apples to apples. But I'll say this. They have more revenue coming in. They're selling more tickets at higher prices than they have ever. They're running stadium shows internationally and doing really well. And they're making more money from TV rights fees, even with the downturn. You know, the unfortunate for WWE that they are going to have fewer viewers for SmackDown not being on a network as big as Fox. Back to you, Joe.
The one thing I did notice, though, because I watched the Raw main event and I watched SmackDown, the crowd is a very family crowd, which is a good thing for them because
yes.
What they want to present. But they're getting – it reminds me of 1990 because they're getting the crowd to cheer when the good guys come out. They're getting the, especially when the bad guys come out, they get the heel heat. They're getting those pops. Now, that's going to change when the WrestleMania crowd comes back in January. That's where you're going to find out because that's where the hardcore fan comes in, and then you're going to get those mixed reactions because the hardcore fan disappears after the night after WrestleMania. He comes back from January to April, and then he disappears unless something major happens during the middle of the year. So that's where you're going to start to see a little pushback. Right now they got the PG crowd in there, and I could really tell. It reminds me of the early 90s, how they're getting those pops with those baby faces. Because the way they were hitting the music on Monday and Cody came out and everybody, you could hear the crowd. They were popping. You could hear the little kids. I mean, so they got that going. So that does make the product seem hotter when you got the crowd popping like that. So it's going to be interesting to see. But I think they could be in for a surprise, though, with some of these changes because they're going for the as much money as they can in each of these deals.
Yeah.
But sometimes that's not good because you could be setting yourself up for disappointment if you don't do it, you know, if you don't keep your product hot because they don't do enough keep the creative hot.
Yeah, Joe, they absolutely have to keep creating stars, keep creative hot, not burn out the fans. All that's true. It's easier to create stars when you have full buildings with, you know, enthusiastic fans. The thing about, you know, taking money over exposure, Fox didn't even give them, you know, a bid, but, you know, WWE could have gone to them and said, hey, you know, we'll take this if you offer this bid. I just don't know. Yeah. I mean, the window of first refusal and they're sort of, you know, sort of a hedge that isn't needed. They're obligated to take the best deal they can for their stockholders. But the abstract aspect of what the best deal is, sort of like the NHL in the 80s, and I'd have to refresh myself on all the details, but they went through a real dry spell of national exposure when they left ESPN and went to a lesser sports network for more money. And it really hurt them because it just was hard for people to find the sports network that – can't remember the name of it. I don't know if they were all regional or if it was just a secondary national one, but the NHL was hurt in the long run by taking more money in the short run. I mean, it's a worthwhile point and you know, the broad statement that they're going to be hurt by not being on Fox. I think there's something to it. I mean, there's something about being plugged during NFL games on Sundays, you know, 20 weeks a year that they're going to lose. And that has made them more mainstream. And now they're going to be on cable during a cord cutting era and they're going to have their seat brand on a third-tier broadcast network. So it's not a given that's going to work out well. Joe, any quick closing words? Because I want to get to Jay in Michigan before we wrap up.
No, thank you. Have a good night, everybody. Have a good weekend.
Very good. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. Javier, anything you want to add to that topic?
Just remind me real quick where – so we have NXT going to CW, SmackDown's going to USA?
Yes.
And there's nobody for Raw right now.
Yeah, they'll announce that early next year.
Okay. Do you know any possibilities that I've heard? I mean, I've heard Disney's been interested. That's one of the ones I've heard. Any idea?
Yeah, I think the indications I get within WWE, and they have to be so careful, and I'm not holding back on what I've heard. They're holding back on what they know. I think it's real delicate, and so I don't know if that means that they've kind of got something picked out or near done, a network, but it's just not finalized. I have to be super careful not to blow it, or if they do have a couple top bidders. But it could involve ESPN, and it could involve Disney. It could involve streaming. I wouldn't rule out Amazon Prime or Hulu or something along the lines where it's a streaming network. But, you know, TBS and TNT haven't renewed with AEW. I mean, what a way for WWE to stick it to AEW to come in and be part of that. So all those are being speculated upon now. It seems like USA and Fox would be the two that aren't really in the running, and you're looking more at ESPN, TNT, TBS, or a streaming network, or some wild card that would be that I think would surprise some people and come with a lot of concerns.
Well, and I know the NBA rights are also coming up, so that also throws things into the.
It does, yeah. I mean, they don't want Raw to be bumped, you know. I mean, whoever pays the most money is who's going to get them. You know, I mean, pro wrestling is a show that streaming networks and cable networks and broadcast networks, they know WWE's destination programming that can count on 52 weeks out of the year for 2 or 3 hours a week of programming, and they're going to overpay for it to get themselves on the radar or retain customers or get new customers who then they think they can turn into, viewers of other shows. And WWE's reaping the benefits of that. They did with Peacock. Peacock, probably overpaid for what they got, but it helped Peacock stay relevant at a time when, other streaming networks are merging or going away and really struggling.
Yeah.
All right, we'll go to Kelly. Are you back with us or still taking care of your nephew? All right, that silence answers that. We'll go to Jay in Michigan next. Jay, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind about tonight's SmackDown?
Well, thanks for having me. I do have something to add about SmackDown, but I've become fascinated with this conversation from the previous caller and some of the information that you guys were divulging before you let me on. So I am I got a couple questions about this whole TV situation. So, with SmackDown going back to USA, is this because we can obviously agree that WWE is definitely a hot product right now. But with them leaving Fox or with Fox not being interested in renewing them, is that deemed, and Wade, you mentioned, multiple times throughout this whole Fox era, that, the ratings weren't where Fox would like them to be. So with WWE being as hot as they are as a product, but yet failing to meet the standards that Fox has set for them, like, is this some type of, blemish on what's going on, just like even with like Roman being the character that he's been the past several years? Like, why is it that they weren't drawing a higher number? I mean, yeah, you've mentioned a lot of the things that go into it, but with them being on network television and them only hitting that high number that one time, like, what do you think was really like pivotal to why they didn't maintain a higher level?
My analogy would be it's like running like major NFL stadiums every week and not being able to fill it with more than 35,000 people as opposed to 60 or 70, and then it's being deemed a failure. Fox just needs bigger numbers to justify having WWE there. It doesn't mean WWE failed. It just means that Fox went in, as has happened before, with bloated expectations of how much WWE would grow with a broadcast audience being cross-promoted on NFL games. And they got a good first number, and it dropped off. There was also a pandemic in the mix, which hurt things. But it's just, they're the number one show demographically on Friday nights. And you can make the argument Fox is making a mistake by not keeping them.
It's not a failure. It's a judgment call, and it has to do with expectations that were wrong from the beginning because, frankly, wrestling has a ceiling in its popularity, and it's a ceiling that makes them the most watched show on cable more weeks than not, a demographic king on cable, and a king of demos on Friday nights on broadcast. But Fox can't make money selling ads for WWE compared to other shows that are cheaper. That might draw smaller demos and may draw a bigger audience with smaller demos, but they might do better from what they can charge for advertising versus how much they pay for the rights fees. And that's their gamble. So this isn't a reflection on WWE. It's a reflection on the reality. If you go back and listen to our coverage and read our coverage back when the deal was signed, I thought they were too optimistic about what the growth would be. But we didn't know. It was uncharted territory. A weekly show on a major broadcast network was not, you know, that hadn't happened in a very, very, very long time. So, I don't see this as any – WWE is as profitable and popular as it's been in a very long time based on the metrics that can be measured. There's a sense that they can sustain what they're doing that I don't think was around during the peak era, during the Monday Night War, where it just felt like, okay, the bubble's going to burst on this. So my take is just it's complicated, it's nuanced, and it doesn't reflect bad on WWE. It's just Fox was a little bit too big for pro wrestling to justify the rights fees that, as I said, other entities are willing to almost overpay in order to try to stay relevant in a changing cable sphere where people are cutting the cord, and Raw has extra value because of that, that Fox didn't feel was worth overpaying for. Jay.
Okay. Now, my next thing was that you mentioned something that I wasn't aware of. So there's a potential chance that Raw is leaving USA, and, like, is that – because I think we've always viewed Raw as the A show, and I think I kind of looked at SmackDown going to Fox as a way of like WWE trying to boost their B show, and then once they put it on Fox, it became the A show. But at the same time, Raw has always been the flagship show. So with USA picking up SmackDown, does that indicate that? And Raw is not – are you saying Raw is not, like, cemented with USA right now, for the next year?
Restate that question again for me, just the end of it there.
Okay, so if I understand correctly, you were saying that it's a potential chance that Raw might go to, like, Disney or one of these other networks. So, like, they're not locked in with USA? Because
USA paid a lot for SmackDown. Jay, USA paid a lot for SmackDown, and it's unlikely paying a lot for Raw at the same level of you know, like per viewer, so to speak, or per hour would make sense because they're going to get a lot of value out of one Raw. They're going to get less value out of two. It's why, you know, you can charge less for the third hamburger at a meal because people get full off of one. And USA, just they're going to benefit from having either Raw or SmackDown. They're going to value less by adding Raw to it. And so the predominant expectation is Raw is leaving USA.
Damn. Like I thought they were getting both, you know what I mean? They value SmackDown over Raw?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like they do. I mean, it's weird, you know. I mean, it's a 2-hour show. It's coming from Fox. But it's been the more highly viewed show lately. But I mean, that can change in a short amount of time too.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's due to in part because I think that's due in part to it being on Fox, and it's not like the star power on SmackDown can't be moved over to Raw if they want Raw to be the top show, because I don't see I don't see SmackDown drawing any more than Raw is drawing, like the other guy was saying. I don't see them drawing any more based on them being on USA with whatever they had. Like, I don't think that they're gonna draw any more than Raw. So all that was fascinating to me, man. But
So what about SmackDown?
That's what I'm going to move into. So my thing with damage control, my thing, only thing I really want to comment on is damage control. So, you know, definitely unexpected with Oscar joining the group. You know, I didn't see a lot of SmackDown tonight, but I don't know what they built or how they built this match up. But, you know, yes, it would make sense that Bianca Belair should not really trust Oscar. But it also does not make a ton of sense that Oscar has joined Damage Control, just given the history with Bayley. But I also think that this is all setting up for a Bayley face turn, which I'm interested to see what you guys think of how that would go. And, you know, how how Bayley being a babyface in 2024 would look.
Yeah, that crossed my mind. Javier watching this is, you know, Bayley's out there and the fans are doing what, and she's insulting them, and she's being, you know, surprised by this. I don't think the best babyface turns come from heels turning on you. You know, the most famous example in recent years, the Authority and Seth Rollins. It's a danger zone for her, and I'm curious how they're going to tell that story, if that's the story that they aim to tell. What's your read on it, Javier?
Yeah, if the idea is to turn Bayley babyface, they're going to have to spend some time as a four-woman group, so that they can basically start giving her the cold shoulder and her try to basically baby herself up. Because yeah, I don't like the idea of that. You know, if she's going to go into babyface, if they just turn on her and take her out, and then all of a sudden, hey, I'm babyface, so get me out of the group. Similar to what happened with Edge. Edge is another one that was recent too, when he got kicked out of the Judgment Day. It's going to be interesting to watch this. I mean, it feels like that's the way that they might go with the Asuka, Kairi Sane, Io Shirai, and probably Dakota Kai as their more spokesperson in the group. But I do hope that they take their time, but not like they had been doing with just the subtle teases here and there, but, you know, give it enough time for Bayley to present herself as a babyface. Unless the idea is, you know, she gets taken out and then we don't see her for a while. And then she comes in and saves, you know, a beloved babyface. Because I think that's the only other way you could do it, but that would require, you know, her to be taken out and then have enough, breathing space for people to kind of forget it.
yeah. I think, and I think they do count on that sometimes, but you can count on it too much and it can hamper what you're trying to accomplish.
And I mean a lot, not like 2 weeks off. I mean, have her out for like almost an entire like season and you know, yeah. Or two, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how. Yeah, go ahead, Jay. Yeah, because I'm kind of I'm struggling to come up with a scenario where I think it's a hot babyface turn.
I think it happened. I think the way that you make it hot, because WWE currently, the fan base has shown that they will, you know, kind of go along with what they want to sell. So I think the way you make it hot is that you do it rather suddenly, and you do it. You don't allow for the heels to turn on Bayley. You make it where Bayley kind of like outsmarts them or gets one step ahead. But I really think the way to do this, and I feel like this will have to happen kind of going into Royal Rumble season, because like the actual Rumble can really like drive the point home. But I think that, you know, they lose a War Games match and they kind of point the finger at Bayley, or she's the one that kind of cost them or whatever. But the thing that I think that really can do it is where the thing that I think that can make it hot is that when Bayley was in NXT, I can't compare what's going on now to what the NXT crowds would be, but the Bayley to Belly finishing maneuver was always super over, and she always did it with such conviction when she was fired up. She hasn't used that maneuver in a very long time. So if she just kind of like flips out, you know, she's already grown her ponytail back. So if she kind of flips out and goes into that rabid Bayley babyface mode and just starts Belly to Bayley and everybody in the group, I think that the crowd will go crazy for that. And I think that that will put her back on the path to being the type of babyface she can be. And I think that's how you do it. And I think you do it rather quickly. And I think you lead that into, like, you know, putting her in position to kind of like make a mission statement going into the Rumble type thing.
I think bringing back the hugs, Javier, was interesting as a thing that I think they can, you know, use as a conduit or a path or a reminder of who she used to be. And maybe that's what they have in mind, and maybe that would work or help.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to signpost something in terms of her a change in demeanor or some sort of thing. I mean, my biggest concern would be that she hasn't really been connecting, even as a heel.
Yeah.
So that's kind of more, that's a bigger issue, I think, more than anything, which is why I think, like, her in some way taking some time to refresh in people's mind, I think that might ultimately be for the best. Maybe they know that at some point Sasha Banks is coming back, you know, through back chat channels, you know, because that would be, you know, but yeah, I did find the hug thing interesting. I mean, and the other option is that they kick her out and she just stays heel. She just becomes bitter about being kicked out from the group, you know, and
right.
She goes to do her own other thing too. So that way, you know, she gets kicked out because Bailey's no longer too cool for the kids, you know, and, you know, that way, you know, you also make damage control, which has also been, you know, no pun intended, you know, fairly damaged too, have them also, you know, come out as the cooler group too, by you know, hey, we're cool, we're kicking old woman Bailey out of the group.
All right, Jay, any closing words from you?
No, that's really all I got, man. I appreciate you guys having me tonight.
Yeah.
Have a good one.
Good. Yeah, I'm glad you helped us explore more of the damage control situation, Jay, because I did want to get to that. And I think it is a challenge. All right, we will close out here with Jeremy from Columbus. Jeremy, thanks for calling. Did you attend SmackDown tonight, or are you just calling about the TV version?
Yeah, I am actually. I took my two sons to the show tonight, and when I got them home and in bed, I called in. I heard you already had a correspondent. I just want to comment on one of the things that I saw at the show that made me think of you. You're always talking about how, Bianca Belair, you know, is so in tune with the female demographic, which, you know, I'm guessing is like a hard demographic to catch. In my section, there were a set of young ladies in front of us and then a set of young ladies on the side that were really, really into the women's match. And it was just something that I just never seen before. Maybe I was just, you know, a happenstance that I was in that group. Because I was, you know, I was always enamored with the idea of Bianca going heel and even, you know, teaming up with her husband and all that. But you're always, you know, I've heard you talk about how, you know, they don't change Bianca's ways because, you know, she does connect with those female fans. And I saw it tonight. The whole show, you know, they were participating, but during the women's match, they really came alive. It was just something interesting for me to see.
Yeah, Javier, how do you feel about the portrayal of Bianca since her return, what they're doing with Charlotte and Bianca? Were they just conduits for the angle with Asuka? Tonight, do you see a sense of where they're heading with them, both of potential War Games and beyond?
Well, I mean, with Bianca, first thing I noticed was when she put that would have been last week, right? When I was on, also when she put Bailey through the table after the match, more aggressive. She's coming at things with a chip on her shoulder. So I've liked that version of her more than when she's just basically, you know, skipping rope with her hair, basically kind of character. You know, so I have enjoyed that. Charlotte Flair does seem like she's in there for the ride. The pairing with Shotzi kind of almost feels like, okay, we got these two bodies and put them together for what's coming up. So you have some, you had another part of that question, Quid?
There's been some talk about her being with the Street Profits and maybe turning heel. Is that something that you think?
They haven't really mentioned much about their relationship recently. I think at first I thought that was what they were doing. And that her losing to Io would have precipitated that. It might just be, so I don't know if this new like aggressiveness she's showing is just basically to get us to War Games. If that's, you know, ultimately where, you know, we're assuming where they're going. And, you know, so you know, it's a more aggressive match, so that's the thing. Or if at some point she does end up turning heel, I think it also determines on if Jade's coming into SmackDown, what side of the fence she's going to sit in. I think that's also,
right.
You know, a big part of it, too, where people – are they going to turn Bayley babyface? I think there's some flux there, so – where she ends up, I think, is going to be more. And are there going to be more call-ups? Because we saw,
yeah.
You know, Ivy Nile also come up recently. So I think there's a lot of flux, and I think there are more pieces that need to be fall into place before she ends up going one way or the other. I would think that they would want another Liv Morgan coming back, for example. You know, I think they would want someone who's got that kind of. Connection with fans as a babyface before they were to turn her, if they're going to turn her heel, if they turn her heel. So, you know, I'm that's just a really long way of being very wishy-washy about it. But
what Josh brings up, though, is the conundrum for WWE when it comes to Bianca. It's like whatever you want to do with her that you think might work better in certain ways, you're giving something up that's working. And, you know, I understand that. I mean, I am curious to see Bianca go back to being a heel, and seeing her hang out with the Street Profits and Lashley, I think would make her more interesting to me. But from a business standpoint, and you know what Jeremy is observing firsthand, I don't think should be discounted. And you know, and some of it does have to do with Jade and what you want to do with her first. Jeremy, yeah.
And is B-Fab going to come into play in any way, shape, or form?
Yeah, good point.
She's now part hanging out with her husband.
Yes, good point. That is a whole other one. So, Jeremy, do you want to follow up on that or share anything else from your experience tonight at the show?
No, that was it. You know, like you said, you know, it may be wise for them to keep the course, make her the female John Cena that, you know, it may pay off dividends in the long run with, you know, female demographic, but... yeah, we had a really good time.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see how it comes across. I want to rewatch it and re-listen to your show. And that's it.
It'll be worth
great.
Jeremy, it'll be worth it. It'll be worth it just to hear Kevin Owens on commentary. He was a blast filling in for Corey Graves. So if you have a DVR, yeah, you'll enjoy it.
The whole time, you know, we would periodically be watching Kevin Owens. My boys were so excited to see him come out. And getting to that little scuffle and everything because they wanted to see him wrestle instead of commentating. I guess someone in the crowd said Corey Graves was having a baby or something, and that's why he wasn't there.
Yep. Carmella had their baby.
He was animated, you know, the whole time, and we, you know, every once in a while just kind of just watch Kevin Owens. He's just so awesome. But it was a great time. Wade, you're great. Javier, you're great too. Appreciate everything you guys do.
Great. Thank you, Jeremy. Appreciate you sharing that with us. Glad you enjoyed the show. And thank you for the kind words. All of that. Very good. Javier, is there anything else from tonight's show that you want to bring? Oh, you know what? I guess the one thing I will throw to you on is did they – move too quickly or just the right speed with everything with Santos Escobar tonight?
anything that gets Santos Escobar out of the whole LWO lovey-dovey stuff and turns him into a badass again, I'm all for. Because I really, really like the Legado the Fantasma thing that he was doing. You know, I'm about to, you know, see if they need a replacement for Joaquim and the other guy whose name I'm not even going to bother to remember because they don't even serve as speed bumps. I could serve as a better speed bump than they do. They've just been like just ridiculously destroyed every single time they show up on TV. They're like grass-fed dummies, which has not really helped out that group at all. I've not been a fan of the whole like lovey-dovey thing between Santos and Ray, and I know there's respect there, but they're grown ass men. You know, it's not like he's dad, and that's almost kind of like the relationship.
The sappiness was a little heavy handed at times.
Yeah,
I mean, so, as a means to an end, so, you know, you always knew it would be. But yeah, my thing is, I'm with you. I want to see Santos Escobar as a heel. Bet he's going to be better that way, more entertaining. But I think they could have told the story at a different pace. And I'm not saying that it would have been ultimately better to do it, but I think they certainly had that option to drag this out a little longer than to have Escobar, you know, react the way that he did, as fiercely as he did.
Yeah, well, I mean, and they're questions because, you know, was he actually really, you know, setting up Logan Paul, you know, setting up the Nux there for Logan Paul.
Right.
So had he already made this decision to turn on him? Is Carlito being sincere when he's questioning Santos's alignment, or is Carlito stirring up trouble for his own goals? So there are a lot of questions. You know, is this an overreaction by Santos? The one thing I didn't like about the heel turn was, again, it's like, oh, this was supposed to be us, and you know, kind of like you know, like jealousy. And I'm like, you know, that shouldn't be Santos's, you know, point of view, you know, because mm-hmm. I liked it when it was respect. It just feels like he put himself beneath Rey Mysterio, and the character that he had been portraying up till then. It just doesn't work for me. The whole thing with him in that relationship, the way it was built up, didn't work for him. I you know, it works for like a younger looking guy. You know, they did similar with Angel Garza and the Humberto Carrillo.
So that, yes,
but you know, I haven't liked that dynamic. But, you know, so hopefully this gets him on track. He's going to need a crew. I kind of wish, like, they finally, you know, part ways with Damian Priest, and we end up seeing Santos and Damian Priest as a faction of, you know, similar to the Legado, which is, you know, kind of like a crime family kind of thing. You know, so I am hopeful that this finally, you know, moves Santos to the better. Don't love the way they've done it. But I just hope it moves them into a better position.
All right, very good. Javier, thank you. Great having you on again.
Always glad to be able to help out. So
Kelly sends his best. He said he likes gabbing with you, he was glad he could join us and sad he had to leave. So, but
too bad I couldn't talk anything board games with him before he left.
Yeah.
Yeah. Disappointed.
There's a few listeners going, yay. all right. Javier, we'll talk to you soon.
You being one of them, I'm assuming.
I sent a photo of my game board shelf to Kelly, and he's like, yeah, that's pretty good. And I'm like, yeah, I know, it can't impress you, but I think it's pretty impressive. I like board games, but
you send me yours, I'll send you mine.
Oh yeah, that'd be fun. All right, we'll do so. We'll swap board game shelf photos this weekend.
Mine's more the floor, but yeah.
Fair enough, yeah. Thanks, Javier. Enjoy your weekend.
Have a good one. You too.
Yep. Thanks to our listeners. Thanks to our on-site correspondents. And we'll talk to you all next time.